Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm doing it.
Are you?
I'm recording audio
I have
too.
to show you. Okay, cool.
You're
Yeah, I mean,
recording the video too?
I have OBS up. It's recording. Like I've done this before, and then inside of the OBS, it's got the Discord screen. Okay. I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Is it recording now or what are we doing?
I'm recording.
Okay.
You're recording? Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to give the intro or do you want me to?
Sure. I'll give the intro with my potato camera. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Milsurp World Podcast, the podcast all about military surplus. Wouldn't you know? I'm Danny. We are here for the first time in video with Aaron and Jared on the two screens. Say hello, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I am pretty excited about today because I've been thinking about doing this for a long, long time, having a video podcast, because I know this is the future. And if you're listening to this on anything else other than YouTube, I guess you won't see the video. But if you go to YouTube, you will see the video format of this one. But yeah, it's cool. It's nice to actually see your faces and everything, guys, while we're talking. This will be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really have a super solid topic for today, except just stuff.
I mean, I would like to point out that to start off that Danny is recording on a potato.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I bought you two guys webcams, and I didn't buy myself a webcam because I got a fancy camera that I'm going to use. But it takes some weird adapter to plug in to it, and I couldn't figure out
sure
what it was or if I had it or where it would be or whatever. So this is my backup, the built-in laptop camera. So next time this will be better. It'll be a little bit more clear. But
you're not even full screen. Like we're full screen, and you're like cropped.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know. This is like 3:4.
You have
it's
a
not even
box.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Cool. Cool. Just over here.
Nice,
in the future.
Nice 280p there. Dude, 280p. Oh, it's original YouTube. There we go.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Oh man, it's only up from here. I hope I can get it a little bit closer or whatever in the future. But
are you wearing a Milsurp World shirt, Danny?
I am not. I am wearing a Texas A&M shirt that has fucking burn holes in it from smoking that I'm doing.
Smoking a crack pipe.
Smoking tobacco with a Bic lighter.
Oh, sorry, YouTube. Not crack.
Florida. Yeah. I'm from Florida, so I do things wrongly on purpose sometimes.
No, fair enough.
So what's up, guys? What's going on? We got to go through our Requin acquisitions.
Requin?
Yeah.
Yes. Requin acquisitions.
Yeah.
Recent acquisitions. Sure. No, you go first, Aaron. We gotta know the story about the brass, Aaron. I feel like this is a pretty good story, and it's like right behind you on camera too. So it's kind of have to.
It's nice because you can just grab it. That's what I did beforehand. I'm like, I'm just gonna go get these. Like,
actually, I want to use a match.
The dramatic effect doesn't really work because of the whole video thing.
Yeah.
Sorry. What dramatic effect?
Yeah.
Are you talking right now?
No. Danny needs better internet. Okay. You had some lag, buddy.
Sorry. I was trying to get the bag open. It's tied shut. So this is finally 6mm Lee Navy brass from. We'll see if this will actually show up on the.
It won't. Or mine wouldn't.
Oh, focus. Do it.
Sometimes you do like this around it. It can kind of help. I don't know if the camera has autofocus
nope,
or whatever.
Whatever. Yeah,
it won't do it on. I showed Danny stuff earlier.
It's RCC brass. Only took 536 days. So.
Wow, speedy.
Speedy delivery, guys. They had a lot of problems, and a lot of delays, non-calling back, and then I canceled the order. And then the brass showed up one day.
You had a refund and everything, and the brass still showed up.
They gave me back my money, and they still sent the brass, meaning they...
That's a good deal, sir.
They didn't quite understand what refund means, I guess, or cancellation. And I did end up paying for it, but not at full price, because of the length of the delay.
Stand-up guy.
Yeah, so there was actually quite a few of us, I think at least four or five of us in the CN Arsenal Discord that bought Lee Navy Brass around the same time period that I was first. Other people have bought it this year, and it only took them about 6 months. So still, with a guaranteed lead time of 90 days, it's a little bit off.
Just a whisker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a gentleman that we talked about before stream before video. I don't know what to call this. Podcast?
Vodcast? Video podcast?
Don't do that.
be that guy.
He bought some of this as well, loaded it, and it did test fire it today. So he's got a video up on his channel. Should we shout him out, Danny?
Yes. His
Tenacious Trilobite.
I had to look it up. Tenacious Trilobite. Yeah. I had not heard of him before today.
He only started posting videos about 9 months ago. He does little short videos. Most of his stuff is less than a minute long, or around a minute long. He likes to do POV videos. He's on the CN Arsenal Discord. We've talked about Lee Navy stuff in the past. So he's got a video up of him shooting 5 rounds. He doesn't go into any details of anything. He's just like a quick, quick shooting video, essentially.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's the new style that's kind of taken over. It's like long form is being replaced. The TikToks and the Vines and everything has changed people's attention spans. And now, if you make a 30-second to 90-second video, it just will absolutely blow up for whatever reason. They push it.
Yeah, he has a M1 video about Grand Thumb that is like 4.5 million views. So it's just a short, though. So, and you can't monetize shorts, right?
Yeah, no, not yet. I think they're going to monetize them soon, but right now, yeah, YouTube shorts are not monetized.
Because you can't do an ad. I don't know. I'm not a YouTube executive. I'm not going to try to figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it in the future. Because, I mean, like, the other apps or whatever make money somehow. Like, TikTok, people make money making shorts on there. I don't know how they monetize it, but YouTube is going to start. But as of now, no. And with short videos, you can't really monetize them at all. I think YouTube says they need videos that are at least 9 minutes long, something like that, so that way you could place ads in the middle and whatever to be fully monetizable. So it's like the company was kind of pushing long form and longer, you know, like 9 to 12 minutes, something like that. And now it's kind of the opposite. Now YouTube Shorts are blowing up. It's almost like the heyday of YouTube again when it comes to shorts, because you can be a smaller channel, put out some catchy shorts and just blow up and have just like Live Tenacious have like 134,000 subscribers and friggin 9 months, which is you couldn't.
Oh, dang.
If you made long form videos, you couldn't do that. What's going on?
You try to sound like a robot for a second there. Did you get that too, Jared?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm reloading on beers in the old mess kit here.
Oh, he's filling up his mess kit with beers again. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's my. I mean, dude, I have Google Fiber. It should be fast. I don't know. Everything says my internet's fine. I don't know. It's the new microphone. Can you see this thing? I don't know if you noticed it.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's nice.
This sounds
nice. Like it sounds good.
It's funny because your audio quality is amazing, but your video quality is shit.
Like you've swapped.
Yeah, and I'm opposite because I'm just using a Turtle Beach headset from like 10 years ago.
Danny, we'll get so many views. Here we go. Ready? It's Minecraft.
Yeah.
Now.
This is officially a Minecraft video.
It's officially a Minecraft video.
Give us the monies, YouTube.
We talked beforehand. I was like, can I drink beer out of a can on camera? Because it's got a logo on it. Like, I don't know. I'm like, I'll just drink beer out of a mess.
Like, I don't know.
He was like, at least, what?
Not labeled or whatever.
We're a sponsored Pepsi stream, obviously.
Oh, that's true.
I just have generic purple drink.
You mean to do my recent acquisitions since I'm sitting up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have two, and they're both actually a funny story, which is why I actually cared about them. My lovely wife, every time I bring a new gun home, she gets excited. She's like, is it a broom handle Mauser? Like, no, because they're expensive. A friend of mine hooked me up. So I got one. And I can just show you if it will do it. It's a commercial one.
Yeah.
But still, it's really nice. Oh, yeah,
sorry,
it's really nice. It's before the new safeties, so it's very, very old. It doesn't. It has a small ring hammer or a small hammer, but it's not a new safety, so it's very interesting. Yeah, and she was.
It was like mid 1900s, I think.
Yeah, it was like 1900 before 1908. I think I looked it up, and it was like 1906 ish. So I got that, and then so my local gun store, what I would call my honey hole, very cool place. They had a pistol that I called Danny about, and he said, "You need to go back and buy it." I got a Langenhahn, and the reason that it was interesting was they didn't. They had a Wikipedia article of what it was under the gun. They had never seen one. And I bought it for like $800, and they're worth more than that. And it's in beautiful shape. The
That's webcam. Weird. Oh, they figured out what it was, but still didn't price it correctly.
Yep. And I've had that before where they do that, but they sold it, so they don't really care, and they buy it on consignment. So
yeah, I mean,
they were able to they were able to figure out what it was because there is just the markings on the side, which is. FL Stabslader DRGM. So they Googled that, and from there they got a Wikipedia article. But where I live, I mean, really, I'm probably one of the only people that knows what this is, other than just a handful of others that I know of.
What's it?
So, 32.
Oh.
32.
Not a popular caliber anymore, really.
No. But beautiful, beautiful shape. It's not re-blued. Just, and I can't really show on camera. We kind of already went over that. But yeah, fantastic gun. I think it's a third model. There's like four models. It's like the third one. But yeah, $800. I called Danny. He was like, "Go back and buy it."
So that's a commercial gun, right?
Yeah, you got to.
It's World War I era that the German army used. It doesn't have like 1920 marks on it, and it's crown end proofed. There's a couple of other markings on it, but a lot of them were like officers' contracts for the Imperial German Army. But neat gun. Seen Arsenal did a video on them if you want to check it out. If you don't know what it is and you want to get some information on it, Seen Arsenal did a video on it. It's one of their very early ones.
Just a simple blowback or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like an FN 1900. So this is the barrel.
It does.
This is the spring.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah. It's the under.
Yeah, this is the barrel.
Yeah,
it's all in frame. Yeah, this is the spring, and it has the I'm not pointing it at myself, but it has the screw in the back that holds the breech block in, so you can like turn it. So May talks about it in the video. They talk about it in the video, but very interesting.
What a pistol. Weird gun!
I've never seen one before, and I've seen this one, and it was a great deal. The only other thing that I might be getting soon is if it's still there. The other day, I was at a gun shop, and I saw a Guatemalan Mauser.
Ooh.
I had to contact Danny, because I was like, what is this? I've never seen this. It was Venice. It was a Checkmade, and it had he took a guess, and it was Guatemalan. I Googled it. He was right. But it wasn't in the greatest shape, but, I mean, it was in Guatemala. But
yeah.
I've been thinking about it for, like, 2 weeks now. And I kind of determined that if it's still there, and because we're going to go buy there in like a week and a 2 weeks, if it's still there, I'm going to buy it because I've never seen it before. Neither is he.
Those are 7, right? 7mm.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's like a VZ-24 and 7mm.
It's one of the only VZ-24 contract, and it's one of only. I think there's only two that I know of that they made in 7mm. They did the Brazilian Revolutionary Rifle that I know of. They probably did another. Little odd contracts.
It was hammered on pretty good by the Guatemalans in the jungle, but it was like how do you price them. That? I've never seen this before, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I probably will never see one again. So, like, I probably should have bought it.
Made
but
sure that Danny bought that Honduran Remington.
Mm. Yeah, those are cool. That was cool.
That'd be one of those like you're never gonna find another one.
You made sure I bought it.
When that popped up in the group chat, I was like, "You better damn be sure buying that."
Mm-hmm. I was buying it. I was like, "Holy ball!"
Mm-hmm. As soon as he sent me the pictures,
this is coming home with me.
Yeah,
I know what this is. Yeah,
yep. Yeah, I'll have to
keep you guys those little odd ones.
You know,
if it's still available.
Yeah, yeah, let us know, man.
Mm-hmm. We got to do, like South America Showdown. Mm-hmm. Figure out the best South American rifle, because you're getting a South American collection going on, aren't you?
A little bit.
I mean, a little bit.
I'm not like 25? Not like.
Yeah. It's going to be one of his 7mm carbines. He's going to be like, it's either this carbine or this carbine. And technically, this one's a little bit better than this one. Yeah, he's counting. He's past 5. We can tell.
19?
Yeah.
All right.
Would you take the shoes off?
So we're making fun of me because I have 11 M95s, but you have 19 different South American Mausers? Oh, I'm sorry. They're not all different.
They're all duplicates. These are all different. There's like a couple duplicates, but like, I mean, the Honduran, that's a Mauser derivative. It's not actually a Mauser.
It's a Mauser.
I mean, I wouldn't call it a Mauser.
I would call that a Mauser.
It's the weirdest looking.
It's a Mauser variant for sure.
It's the weirdest looking thing, that's for sure.
If it looks like a Mauser and it smells like a Mauser and tastes like a Mauser, it's a Mauser.
It's over, right? It's like right there on the bottom rack. This bottom rack here to my left is all my South American stuff, and Swedes up here, Germans over here.
Where's the M95s?
In the garbage.
I just softballed that one to you.
You really did.
That's all it was. I knew it was coming. Yeah. So
I have my
M95. The better M95 is up on the wall. The Dutch M95.
That was a good dig.
You also have a Chilean M95, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I got one. Yeah. Yeah. I almost bid on a Chilean 1893 today. Ooh. But it was re-blued. It was re-blued, or else I probably would have. But yeah, I've been looking for one of those for a while. I ran across one in Cabela's one time. It was pretty rough. But I think it was like $500 or something. I was like, ooh, it was just slightly better condition. I probably would have. But yeah, I've come across a few of them, like 3 or 4 at like various shows. People never know what they are when you see like a Chilean 1893. They assume they're just like a regular 1895. But I'm like, au contraire, sir.
I'm always looking for a Brazilian 94.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I've only seen one, I think.
They're always all clapped out.
Oh, yep. And it was rough as shit. Yeah, they're
not.
I don't know what they put those things through, but man, they are all garbage. Like they're all rough. You can't find. If you find a decent one, like if you find a Brazilian 1894 and you're like, man, this thing is kind of rough, buy it, because that's like the best condition one. Because usually they're like, oh fuck that, I'm not buying. Like that's usually how they are. But they're just like
string.
If it's only yeah, pretty
Does
much.
Does it look like it was drugged behind the back of a pickup truck? No, buy There's, it.
Yeah, it's strapped to the side of a donkey through the jungle for 30 years.
Yeah, man.
So the brass was your recent?
Oh, yeah, sorry. The brass was mine, and then...
I just wondered if we're going around.
Yeah, you're up. It'd be you.
I just listened to the last podcast that we recorded back in July. We have a little gap between recordings, but not between releases. We like stored up on recordings. But on that one, it was right before the big Missouri Valley show. And I got quite a few guns at the Missouri Valley show. It's real funny because like Jared was talking about this Langenhahn because he just bought that one. And then at the Missouri Valley show, I ran across a second variant Langenhahn that was on a table for $600. It was pretty good shape. And I was like, oh shit. So I got to buy that because you just don't see them. And if I find one... And then later on in the show, I find another one. It's a fourth variant with wooden grips. It was like $550, I think, is what I offered him, and he accepted. I was like, holy shit, you just never see these. And all of a sudden, I run into two, and Jared's got one. So we got that one. The 1913, say somebody, Frantic. I think Frantic's on the list. Hey, Frantic.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, we're actually recording a podcast right now.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, it's okay, man. I got the two Langenhahns, the Sauer 1913, which was kind of a, it was a very end of the show last day, last hour of the show, and there's a guy that had a bunch of guns there. And I would check on him every few hours because I don't know where he's pulling these guns from and putting them on his table. But it was the little 1913 with a police holster, with like a 1935 dated holster or something like that. You know, two mags, good condition and everything. And it was just, you just wanted $400 for it. So I was like, sold. I got that. I got the Hakim trainers, which I found two. It was on, one guy had like a table full of like BB guns. And then he just had two air trainers, Hakim air trainers, which is like the ones with the skulls on them. Which I was joking around with people and telling them that's an SS. That's an SS trainer right there. See the skull? But he had two of them, and I ended up buying both of them. And I gave one to Milcert Mike, and then I kept one because I need one to go with my Hakim. I bought a Hakim. Oh, yeah, at that show. I bought a regular Hakim. I bought a Hakim. It's like weird pairs. I bought a Hakim just, and a Hakim trailer.
I bought so many things. Too long, Hans. What I bought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. And it's funny, too, because he's telling me, that's a great deal. You should buy that gun. And like 3 days later, he's like, hey, check out the shit that I bought. I'm like, thanks, dude.
Yeah.
I felt good and for 2 days. And then now I feel like
you still got a good deal, man. I still think that's a good deal on this one.
I mean, it's the place
just
I got
the ones.
Some good stuff from there. We went there earlier this week, and they had some cool stuff, but they didn't have anything that I felt like I couldn't live without.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I just go there with it. Yeah,
I forgot stuff what had- else I bought from there. I bought a couple. I bought a lot of. I've been kind of on a binge. Bought a couple M1s. Did I say that last show? I can't remember if I said that last show. I bought a couple M1 rifles, a 900,000 serial and a 3 million serial. So a 1942 and a 1944. Both of them have
barrels. What's the third version?
Yeah, what were the numbers?
Probably so shit.
Like, what's the muzzle? What's the muzzle version?
Did you do a bullet? Did it go all the way?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. No, they were 8.
Is it CMP certified?
Yeah. Has this been through
the you know what program? I think they were CMP guns. I think so.
Is this a drawing but matching does M1?
Does it have the little certificate or no?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, then it's worthless.
No, it just they did come with a CMP case.
Oh, is it?
So there
is
you go.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a pause. Is it so pattern there, matching? Like, does it have the right op rod for the era? Like.
You know what's funny though? The 44 gun had a milled trigger guard, and the 42 had a stamped trigger guard.
We gotta swap that around, right?
Just to make them more. Yeah, I was like, you gotta swap those around just to make them more correct. But Joel Panzerfaust Armory, he got like, I don't know where he got them from, but he got like a bunch all at once, so. I don't think he ordered them straight from the CMP. I don't think he. I don't know, because he had like five. Like you, I don't. I think you can only get three at once. So what?
I can make you feel bad finally because I have a CMP M1 that I bought at a gun show for $875.
Oh, I paid. I paid $850 a piece for these.
Sorry, you broke up. What?
I paid $850 a piece for these. Yeah.
Is it right certified?
I have the certificate.
Yeah. If you don't have a certificate, then
oh, shit. I'm gonna have to. I'll have to Google it.
It's like
I'll
an, to Google it's like an Arisaka print one out for it. It's basically worthless.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a Moss 49. Actually, I bought two Hakim rifles. Funny enough, because.
Okay, so again,
I'm kind of forgetting. Dude, I was really bad. I need to calm down. So Joel, again, Panzerfaust Armory, Joel, he's like, hey, I have these guns in. What do you want? And it was a list. It was a Moss 49, a Moss 49 56, a Hakim, and some other stuff. And they were all like $900 a piece, something like that. And I was like, I was like, 49, 56, 900. And I was like, that's a pretty good deal. And I was like, wait, a 49, like a regular 49? And he was like, yeah. I was like, oh, well, like, send me a picture. He sent me some pictures. Great shape. I was like, I want that. That one for sure. Yes. And then I think I asked Jared about the Hakim at 9. And he was like, yeah, you need to buy it for 9.
Yeah.
So I bought that one. So I paid him for both of those, but I hadn't picked them up yet. And then I go to the Missouri Valley show and I find this other beautiful Hakim, and I got it for $850. I paid $850 for it with a Bannet. So I was like, oh, it's cheaper. And then I got the one from Joel, and the one I got from the show is nicer. So I don't know.
Have
which
you
is,
shot it yet?
No, I want to.
They have the reputation for being loud as hell with that muzzle brake.
I bet. So I shot an FG-42 one time at an outdoor range that was covered, and that, you know, 8mm through a big brake is pretty, it's jarring. So I'm guessing the Hakim with that brake is also going to be very jarring.
Yeah,
with 8mm.
I knew somebody that had one, and he always called it the range clear because he would just go out and fire 5 or 6 rounds rapid fire, and everybody would be like, stop that.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to try my little Car 88 doing that, like an actual 8mm carbine, and see how loud it is. I haven't got to do it yet, but I want to see how loud it is.
Yeah. Bought another 38H, so I'm back up to 4 38Hs now. At the last show, because I had 4 and I sold one or something for another gun. There's something I needed to buy, so I sold the gun to pay for the gun. And then anyway, I think
tell me you have a problem without telling me you have a problem. I mean,
dude,
I have a problem
but I don't know how my wife puts up with me, but
she's a saint. I've met her. She is a lovely person.
She is a saint.
Wow. Very nice lady.
Uh-huh.
I think that's it. I don't know. I can't think of any. I think that's it. Oh, Peruvian 1935s.
Yeah, here we go.
Sorry. Oh. Sorry. I got another. So I unboxed. Sorry. I bought the Peruvian 1935. Yeah, sorry. So I had the 30-06 Peruvian 1935 that I unboxed that I got from Mustache Man. Well, another Joel hookup. A friend of his had a Peruvian 1935 in the original 7.65.
You didn't tell me about that one, Dick.
Oh, sorry. Did I not?
So you now have one that's converted and one that's not?
Yep.
I thought we
were
friends.
Like, sorry, Jared. Forgot. There's too many. I'm telling you, I can't remember.
Those were 30,
what I got.
Right? 30-06?
Yeah.
Yeah, they converted them to 30-06, but yeah, originally 7.65. I took them to the range when I shot the Johnson in that trip, and I shot both of them side by side, the 7.65. The 7.65 was much more pleasant to shoot than the 30-06. That was a little kicky and a little light carbine.
I have a stupid question, but I think I know the answer, but did they re-barrel them, or did they just punch the throat out? Because it's 3.11.
I don't know.
It's 311 bullet diameter on a 7.65.
You can't. You can't.
It's 313. You can't.
Is it 313? Excuse me. You're right. It's 313, and that's why you can't reload for them, because they suck, because they only make 311s. Thank you. You're dead right. But 30-06 is 308, so it wouldn't shoot for shit. And that's why I asked.
It would be shit. And, yeah, you'd have to rebarrel them.
And that's why. That's what poses the question, right? So.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Let me know after the podcast.
I don't know. I'm gonna have to look into it. That's I'm planning on doing a video on them, and that's why I kind of wanted both, so I could show both.
Put that in the video.
Yes. With the way the handguards, the top handguard, the wooden handguard is, it goes all the way down. It covers the whole barrel, so you can't see it. So I can't see if it's remade or the original markings.
Wait, did you say Peru?
I can't compare them. Yes.
They got SIG to make replacement barrels. I know.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, there we go.
My
okie dokie.
The 1909 that I had, and I sold it to buy more M95s. It had a replacement SIG barrel from like the 30s or something. I don't remember when they did it, but they did a bunch of. They had SIG make a bunch of barrels for them. Now that was 7.65 still, but I'm assuming that they just did the same thing, but with the 30-06.
That would have been post-war, because everyone went to 30-06 after World War II, because we had a bajillion rounds of ball, M2 ball.
Yeah, and we forced South America to take it.
I mean, the people with 7mm kind of got the shaft, but the people with everything else kind of got it, kind of won. So
yeah, I'm trying to think of all the South American countries that did it.
Brazil.
Chile. Brazil.
No, Chile did NATO.
308. They did 308, yeah. So Argentina and Brazil, that I know of.
I don't know if Venezuela did any.
What rifles did Argentine chamber? 30-06.
I think the 1912s.
Was it 1935 or 1934? 1934?
No, I don't know about police carbine.
The Colombians.
I'm trying to remember.
Colombia.
The Colombians did it.
Colombia. There we go. Brazil, Colombia, Brazil, Peru for sure. And yeah. I think Argentina, but I don't remember.
Now, Argentina might have been NATO because they had the 308 fouls. Or not fouls.
They did.
FN-49s.
Yeah, they did.
So I was wrong on the Argentina thing, and I apologize to everyone who's telling me I'm wrong. I think they did 308. So Brazil, Colombia, and anyone
Peru.
Else. Peru. So.
Which is funny because Argentina and Peru were allies for a long time, which is why Peru was 765 along with Argentina, whereas most other countries, I think everybody else was 7, right? Nobody else did 765, right? I don't know who else was allied with.
I'm sure like one country did.
Well, it was basically, I'm going to boil down a shitload of South American history, but it was essentially like two factions for the most part, and they were definitely vying for each other, and they all didn't really care for each other the entirety of all the countries. So, but I believe the region Argentina never switched was something like to the idea that if their guns were captured, they couldn't use 7mm in them. So I don't know.
I think I can account for every country except for like French Guiana, like the little guys,
the little ones. Yeah, like Paraguay. I know they have.
Was 7, I thought, because I've seen Paraguayan Mausers and Uruguayan Mausers Uruguayan rolling blocks were 7.
Yeah.
That's where my mind was at.
Who had the diabetes rifles, Danny?
Those are Dodotos. They're Uruguayan.
That's Uruguay? Okay.
Yep.
We call them diabetes rifles because that's a running joke in our group chat.
It's fine. That was Uruguay, I thought. But they also had the 7s and the little tiny rolling blocks. They're so cute and I want one. They're in 7, I thought.
Yeah, I want a little rolling block carbine in 7.
Chile's in 7. Colombia's in 7.
Brazil's
in 7. Peru's in 765. Yeah, I think that's it. I think Panama's in 7, if you count Panama in South America or Central America. But I don't know where to draw a line. So. But yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah, 7mm is definitely the dominant cartridge in South America.
Is Bolivia in South America? I can't geography.
Yes, it is. The American education system, everybody.
Hey, I'm an ignorant hillbilly. Everybody knows that. All right.
Have you seen any of the videos of like them interviewing kids like in Times Square or whatever? It's like Zoomers don't know anything, and they just ask them like, "How many dimes are in a dollar?" And like these kids can't even say that. If you watch some of those videos, you'll feel better about not knowing, exactly where the dollar is on a map or whatever.
How many nickels are in a roll? You know that one. So, anyways. Do you know?
I worked at a bank, so I probably should, but I don't remember. I was like the worst job I ever had working at this bank. I'm not going to say their name, but geez.
To be fair, I'm drinking beer out of a mess kit. If you're wondering how many beers a German mess kit holds, it's 4.
And this is your second mess kit? Reload?
Yeah. The Bush lattes.
You know, it really does look like Danny's lighting up a crack pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no good way. I know. Drugs have just tainted it. A gentleman cannot even just smoke a tobacco pipe now without.
It's because you're using a lighter.
I know. A fucking white trash Bic lighter upside down. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it does.
That's why it looks trashy. If you had like a strike match,
or even a Zippo, like have some class. Cripe.
I have a pipe lighter, like a nice one. It broke after 5 years or whatever. It finally broke. I need to get something new. I brought these matches from a MRE or not an MRE, a cold weather ration. MCW. I was gonna use these matches, but the Bic lighter is just so much easier.
At least now we can see each other, so we know that half the podcast is just us bashing on each other for dumb shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to discuss what's behind me?
Your Bob Ross fanning?
Yes, it's a beautiful original.
Happy little trees.
It's my uncle actually made it, so it's not an original Bob Ross because they actually go for a lot of money.
Yeah, but so jeez. Yeah.
So like all of these are, those are all like from one of my former coworkers. They're nutritional supplements tubs, and that's where all my brass is. So
I got a tip on that one then. I use the pretzel containers because they're clear.
Yes, but they're also super salty when you clean them out. These these have a nice fruit scent to them.
Oh, I see. I see.
So as you're shooting at the range, you get a nice little fruity aroma.
I use the only other reason I use the pretzel ones is because they're square. So they stack on a shelf real nice. And then you can just write on the lid what they are. That's how I do it. And they come in different sizes. So you get the big ass ones for like 30-06. Yep, that's exactly what I do. And we can't hear you. That's exactly what I do.
It's mirrored, so you can't see it anyway.
Yeah.
But this says 30-40 cleaned and
you can read it.
Mirrored.
Yeah,
it's not mirrored.
Oh, it's mirrored on my end.
Yeah, you're good.
So you can see it in there.
Is that what you made your 6mm Lee Navy brass out of?
Yeah, 30-40, right? That's how you make sure it explodes.
I got a lathe. We can cut the groove in them for the recess. That's a good idea, though.
So this is my Harbor Freight gym polishing cleaning kit for cleaning brass. Which is
it tense?
No, it's still
media.
It's lizard bedding,
walnut lizard bedding. Yeah,
yeah. So what it does is it just there's two bars here and it just rotates those bins around. So like a rotisserie or like a hot dog roller.
Huh.
Yeah. And then so I have.
You have a Hornady Lock and Load powdered major.
Because I had the same dispenser,
one.
Yes.
I had the same one.
this thing is amazing. I will never go back to the other way of doing it. that's a brass trimmer.
These do you have the power adapter for the drill? That's a Lyman, isn't it?
Yes. That I actually bought secondhand, so I do not have a power adapter for it.
They make a power adapter for it, so you can chuck a drill onto it. And after you get that, you'll never go back to doing it by hand. Because if you got to do, like, let's say someone sends you a bunch of brass they want converted into 6.5 Dutch.
Oh, what you assholes. Gotta,
yeah, what kind of a douche would do that? you got to cut all this brass. The easiest way to do it is with a drill, because you just chuck it in. So same way you got it, and just slam it. And it works really good.
So, Danny, do you know what this is?
Powder?
So this is from that Argentina surplus we bought.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
This is like what I pulled out of it. I did burn some of it in my yard to see what would happen. It was weird. It did not burn properly.
That's good.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you have a lock and load press, I see? Or is it a Lee press?
Looks like a Lee.
This shit stinks. I should probably throw this away.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
That's a Lee. That's a Lee. Lee the Lee circle press, not a C press.
Okay.
The C presses are known to break after a while. The O ones are a little bit sturdier. And then also I have all my ammo boxes and then all my different various dyes.
I should do like a mini gun room video for Danny.
And then there's some pink headphones and... different powders and stuff in here.
You should open up all the drawers. Tell us what you got in all the bins.
On the subject of powder, at least around here, it seems like the powder is starting to come back, which is a very positive sign. It's not all, like, all the good stuff isn't back yet, but all the dumb shit's back. And I'm happy about that because it means that the good shit's coming. So that's a positive sign for now. Oh, so you're matching
6mm.
There we go. You got all the ingredients, right?
Look how thin this little thing is. It's so little.
Yeah. It's like a little needle. Yeah.
So these are 110 grain because the original loading, military loading, is 112. Now, these are obviously FMJ Bowtails because nobody makes a
round nose
flat bottom full metal jacket for $6 million. Well, I don't know why that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So that's why these are FMJ Bowtails. So, yeah. So I'll be using IMR 3031.
Oh.
And just because it's a very common powder too. So, and I've used it the most. I use 3031 and 4895. I want to say.
That's a M2 powder. 4895 for like M1s and stuff. That's the common one. It's a little dirty, but. I use for the 8x56, I think I use a 4064. It's a blue. That's 3031. I can tell by the jug because I'm a nerd. That's 4895, I think. Or is it 4350?
4350, I apologize.
4350. I use that for the 7184.
So I use...
It's a slow powder.
It's a slow powder. I use this for my Chilean 1895, 7mm.
Really?
Yeah.
It was like a Varget for 7mm.
Oh, I like this. This works okay.
Yeah.
I got a cool. I got a shitload of can you guys hear me okay? Because I'm getting further
away from
Yeah.
I got a shitload of these Hertenberger. I don't know how to pronounce it. Some German company.
It's a German company. Yeah.
That have made a bunch of flat bottom round nose 7mm bullets as like a special run or something. And this guy I bought them from out in the middle of Wyoming had a shitload of them. So I bought a bunch from him. And they're like great. They're like exact representations of the military round for Chilean or just the military 7mm round. They're round nose FMJs. I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah, I use a hell lot of some of that stuff. I think the only thing I use 3031 for is 300 Savage, if I remember right. But.
I have a bunch of round nose 7mm still. Two different makers. It came when I went to J&G and bought my Spanish 1916s. They had optional, if you bought a Spanish 1916, then they would allow you to buy 7mm Mauser ammo. Mm. Fucking weird, but since I bought two, they were like, you're allowed to get one of each or whatever. So I bought a bandolier of 7mm, and then it was a box, like a big square box. God, I forgot the maker of it, but it was like you'd recognize it, a common maker. But it was a big, like, square box. It's really weird, but it had 100 rounds in it, like, just kind of all together in this box. It's kind of odd, but it was all round nose, which I was like, oh, that's interesting.
We don't want to see your jar of yellow stuff.
Oh boy,
that's a piss jar.
Come on, who knows what it is?
That's when you're on the podcast too long.
This is not pee. Yeah. My pee is not this viscous.
know
what it is?
The forbidden honey.
Oh no, I would not drink this. Although you could, it is safe to drink.
Mad honey. What is it?
It is technically edible. I wouldn't.
What is it, like taste lube or something? What is that?
Yeah,
fire. This is tongue oil. This is pure tongue oil.
Oh.
This is not tongue oil finish. This is pure tongue oil.
How many tongues does it take to squeeze out that much oil?
I don't know. But so the bottle that it came in, this is why it's in mason jars, the bottle that it came in was broken in transit and was leaking out. And so fun fact, pure tongue oil is auto-igniting. So if it's open, that's why they say whenever you use it, do not leave the rags in the trash. Like, lay the rags out.
Oh, yeah, so yeah.
They air out because it can auto-ignite. This shit was all over the box. And I'm like, you guys, you know, almost lit your UPS truck on fire, you know?
Oh, man.
We're not worried about that little guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's way more dangerous than, like, primers. And they're so weird about shipping primers. Like, it's a hazmat or whatever. But, like, yeah. Don't get... started.
They're not that big a deal.
I've heard that about BLO, boiled linseed oil rags. Like, they were like, don't leave the rags out.
A lot of stuff like that. A lot of oils are like that. The fumes, if they're trapped, they can react and heat up and then auto ignite.
The best is the guys cleaning their electric guns, like impact guns, off of brake clean at the garages, because they're like, and they're spraying them off while they're running. And it's like, you guys are gonna catch on fire, and they don't realize that, and then it's hilarious watching the new guys catch on fire
for your gun stocks.
Oh yeah, Renaissance wax. I was just reading about that today.
It's good stuff. A lot of museums use this.
You can put that all over the metal and stuff too, right? Like, yeah, not just metal, the stocks.
Metal stocks, whatever. It doesn't matter. I've used this. I've had this for like 10 years. I barely use enough of any of it. It goes on every single one of my guns.
Yeah. I've only had an M95, like, nice enough to be worthy of museum too. Grade. You put that under your Lee Navy?
I don't know if I have.
Boy. You better do that, sir. That is worthy of wax.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, the British Museum.
Yeah. I started cleaning my... Oh, what you got there?
Is it for M1s?
It's grease. So, I don't... When you want to grease your bolt, because you got a sticky bolt, you got to grease it.
Oh, man. I was talking with somebody about that, and I was like, yeah, the M1 rifle is so good, they shoot it with grease.
Yeah, it's a lubriplate, which is a whipped oil, if you're wondering.
So the M95s, the grease they used in the M95s was when they went into Russia in World War One. Oh, Jared disconnected video. When they went into Russia in the World War One, the grease froze solid, so they couldn't open the bolts.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Whoops.
I was just thinking of the story. I don't know. We might have. I know you're talking shit about my internet, and then, yeah. Can you still see and hear me and everything? I don't know. I don't know what happened to you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Maybe you texted us or something. Oh, yeah. It's what they say about beer. You don't buy it, you rent it.
Oh, so he'll be back shortly. You broke up there for a second. I got you.
Oh yeah, you don't buy beer, you rent it. In case you broke up in that. yeah. You don't buy it, you rent it.
Yeah.
I was just saying.
Yeah. It's two mess kits is the limit.
Yeah, you got it. I'm pretty sure. So I heard somebody that had kidney stones or something, and their doctor recommended beer.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Or kidney stones or something like that. Yeah.
So I'm not sponsored by these guys, but if you guys find these, this brand, this usually is more expensive, but all their stuff is made out of metal. So like all the rods, all the little tools, nothing's plastic.
Bad for your bore.
Not unless you're banging it around.
That's what you're going to hear. That's why I like the Tipton rods. The carbon rods are nice.
I just don't clean my bores.
Yeah, you don't.
I just shoot them in.
If you shoot Varga, you don't have to. It is such a clean burning powder, and I'm totally not sponsored by them. But I've shot Varga.
We need to be.
It is like.
We need to get a sponsor, damn it.
A single patch and be like, done, clean. It's amazing. I love it. It's so great. That's my experience, too. So if your experience may vary, but my experience is it's good. And I don't know what I gave you for the Dutch gun. I think it was not that. But
yeah,
maybe it was. I got it wrote down. I just...
Yeah, I really got to shoot those, man. It's going to be an undertaking. And I would like to have at least Jared and maybe one other person would be good. I mean, not Jared, not you. Joel at his place. Because I need like people to comment on the recoil for that video.
I would... If I could, I would fly down like, oh, that's cool.
Did that come with your Krag?
I forgot I had that down here. That's a Christmas gift I got. No, it's... You can get these printed up. They're all the copyrights. So if you find the exact one you want to look at, you can get it printed up. Hey, Beef, we're doing a podcast right now, actually.
Hey, Beef, you can say hello if you want on the podcast.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. It's okay, man. I know we're not in the podcast chat today, so everyone's hopping in. It's because the video sharing thing wouldn't work in our podcast, like our locked podcast chat. So don't feel bad or anything, Beef.
Well, I'm Audi 5000.
All right, see you later, Beef. We're in our Discord right now. In case you guess it, so our Patreons get access to the Discord. And
yes, and there was weird, funky things with the podcast chat specifically. So that was why we're in the general. But it works. I mean, it it seems to work so far. We'll see until Danny messages and says, hey guys, I didn't get to, you know, record any of this.
I know, it still says it's recording. It still says it's going.
That's good.
Got a timer.
This is kind of a fingers test crossed. As well, you know?
Exactly.
We didn't really have
if the video topic. Doesn't if the video doesn't work, it's going to be the most fucking boring podcast ever.
Terrible.
With the show and tell going on right now. Yeah. Probably not even going to air it.
But if it does, it's great. Like, and it's really just a, like, yeah, we're just kind of bullshitting, but this is like a proof of concept, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I need to get a non-potato camera.
Mm-hmm.
And we will, yeah, what's in the box?
I think it's sponsored by like a beer company.
What's in the box?
This is Aaron showing off his whole room.
It's my basement. Which is,
hey, it's, you're not hearing me,
are you? It's your room. So you have a little, you have a little cot down there.
I take my laptop into my gun room, but that would be a bad deal. It would look like Danny's, but with like reloading shit.
I forgot I had this. So this is all, so I went to an antique store and they were like, oh, we're selling old ammunition and it's antique. And I'm like, it's not. But I bought it anyway. And they didn't even check to see like any kind of, like, they're just like, oh yeah, you can buy it. So I did have these though. So there, I'll get them out of the bag. Hang on.
I got to ask, just because I'm curious, were they not supposed to sell you ammo?
Yeah, I was curious. So,
and they didn't even ask
to that as age. Well.
So like,
oh, because you got to be 18 to buy ammo.
Yeah, okay. And then Illinois has.
I think it's just in the U.S.
Too, so I don't know if that was legal or not, but I bought it.
You're over 18; it doesn't matter. But
has it passed the statute of limitations on that? You can just say it was like 8 years ago.
That's black tip, though.
This is and it's 1942 dated. DM. 1942, black tip M1 ball or whatever it is, not ball.
Yeah, AP. M2 ball.
It's AP.
It's AP, right? Because it's AP, it's got the black paint on it.
Yeah. Almost out of beers.
I got some. I have some AP, 30.6 AP right over here. Let me adjust my.
Oh yeah.
You can't see it, but it's right there on the clips.
I never end up with cool deals like that.
I found something like that. Salt Lake City, Utah, I ran into an antique store and they had an ammo collection from some guy that passed and they were selling. And he had all sorts of old ass funky ammo. And that's why I own one original 6mm Lee Navy round. And it's because it came out of that. Like I recognized it. I was like, oh, snap, you don't really see those too often.
Yeah, so like this is...
It's like Navy marked.
Like, this was like a guy's collection, I guess, because it was just all random stuff. So here's probably one of the most random ones. This is 218B.
Dang. Never seen one. It's like the first page in every reloading book.
Yeah.
This is the smallest one.
This is Winchester Super X 218B.
Huh.
What even shoots that?
I don't have any rifle. Idea.
They need to make a youth Mauser. Like, look for that. That way we can say, you know, I've had the idea before. Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah.
I think I'm quiet. I had an idea of what if you took like a regular candy AK and you scaled it down, right? Because it's got like a 23.5-inch barrel, something like that, and scale it down in size to 16-inch barrel, which would shrink it like it'd be like a, I don't know what the ratio would be, but, it'd be like 75% size or something like that. So just slightly shrunk. And then that would be a smaller, lighter, handier Canadian AK, like for kids or whatever. How they make those the Mosins, the 22 Mosins and stuff.
That would be 3/4.
No, I was thinking of a different fraction. And then I just said 75% because I think that's different.
Like 7/8?
Let me do the maths.
You do the math.
Because I thought about like it'd be cool if they could bring it down, you know, shorter than 16, but I was like, no, you can't do that. Even if it's like a mini gun, as long as it's a real gun, you can't bring it down any shorter.
What are the youths? The target rifles, the like a Walther.
68. It's 68%. So it'd be a 68% smaller gun.
A 5/8?
So Danny, this is a 7.62 or 7.65 by 53, which is the Argentine round we were talking about.
116?
And you can't quite see it, but you can maybe see it. Do you see that it's already been fired?
Yeah.
Or attempted, I should say.
You can see a shadow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Notice.
Yep.
Still got the bullet.
isn't like ammo that has the primer been dented, isn't it like worth less to collectors?
Well, here's the thing. This is all the same.
Oh, no, I just figured I would, because I'm not an ammo collector, other than like I got some cool, you know, German ammo or whatever.
I got that ammo and I ran it through my Argentine carbine, the 1909 carbine, and it was like 1 in 5 maybe went off on the second try or something. It was terrible ammo.
40s and probably early 50s Argentine surplus ammunition for 7.65 is garbage. But correctly sized bullets.
Yeah, so that's the point.
If you get it cheap, you got the right size bullets for it.
Yeah, which is the whole
thing. Yeah, yeah. Just pretty much, yeah, just for the components. Now, I have some boxed 7.65 Argentine. The box is good shape and everything. The brass looked really good. I ran it through my Peruvian 1935, and it all went bang the first try. No hang fires or anything. So I was impressed by that ammo. So if you find it in a nice like box like I did, you can. It's probably better. But pretty much whenever I find like good condition 7.65, I'll buy it. Which it's not too often that you find it really.
I've had some Ecuadorian 8mm though, and it was kind of clicky. It didn't always go.
Oh, I have some of that stuff. I had an idea a long time ago that I was going to get a bunch, like every nationality of 8mm that I could find. Like, so I bought like Ecuadorian and whatever, and I have a bunch of other little random 8mm. And I was going to do like a shoot where I shoot like every single one through a K98K, like in one sitting, and just kind of see how it goes or whatever. But I probably need a chronograph or something to kind of make that more worthwhile. But yeah. Kind of curious. Yeah, how it all shoots and handles and stuff like that. Oh, here we go. I got an idea. I'll let you finish, Aaron.
It's a 50.
It's 50.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
It's 1942. Then this one has a little hole, so somebody drilled a hole. Remember you were talking about deactivating rounds, Danny?
Yeah.
You know what's funny? People are scared of 50. They'll do that just like if they never plan on shooting it, but they want to collect it, they'll do that. Just because they're scared of it. When I bought some live 50, like a single live 50 round one time, and guys were like, "You need to like deactivate that. You need to get the powder out or whatever, because like it'll explode. It's a basic like in their minds, it's basically a bomb." But have you ever seen the picture of the guy's hand where a 50 round went off in his hand? He was holding. He was doing a dumbass thing. So like, imagine this Bic lighter is like a 50 round, you know, and the primer's in the bottom and he was beating something with it and it went off in his hand.
That's natural selection.
Yeah, the military like released images of his hand with the warning of like, don't use a 50 cal round as a, you know, whatever.
That is straight natural selection. Did he have kids?
I don't know. He's got one less. He's got...
This is a gnarly.
It was gnarly.
They filled this original 43 casing with lead.
Yeah.
And it's just super heavy paperweight. I don't even know if this projectile is not lead or not. I don't really touch it a whole lot.
Can you scratch it with your fingernail?
But the neat one that I have that's 50, this is 1936. So that's pretty cool, I thought. Middle of the Great Depression.
It's an old round.
I have a... I have the Russian 50 equivalent. They're 12.7 or whatever.
Yeah,
I found that at a gun show one time.
Dishka?
It was in a zip. It was in a Ziploc bag, and it was with a bunch of Iraq bring back stuff. Somebody brought back from Iraq. But I was like, shit, that's the first one I've ever seen. Like the Russian.
It's never gotten any.
Okay. Yeah, you kind of get. Have a reloader, really? I would assume that you would be more likely to do it.
I got a machine. You know what I mean? Because
I don't reload, but I collect blanks.
Yeah, so...
Oh, yeah, they got those red.
Yeah, those are blanks, yeah.
So it's M1 blanks. It's a clip, M-block clip full of blanks, which I thought was pretty cool. I've never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what, this would be for practicing, and then also, like, what? Like
ceremony, like for funerals
stuff.
And stuff.
Yeah.
No, I don't do the ammo thing. I don't have a room for that because people get nuts over that stuff. Like, you see the boards and stuff. No, I don't have room for that.
Yeah, I don't display it. I just keep it in boxes in the basement like a normal human being.
But I've seen your giant boxes of shit. You got a lot of shit. And that, like, I don't have room for that. I make everything out of two sets.
Got a couple. I was going to say, so I have this thing I want to do. And I'm trying to find the right one because I need to find a sporterized or just like a barreled receiver, a Swiss 1889, right? So like the original, the first 7.65 one, mm-hmm. right? The one with the 12. An
actual Schmidt-Rubin.
A mag. But I don't want to take, yeah, the actual one. I don't want to take like a beautiful, nice example and do this, but I want to find one that's been sporterized or whatever. It's junk. I found a barreled action on broker right now. It's like $200, which I'm like, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's a non-gun, so it'd be kind of cool. You can just buy it or whatever. But I want to take that thing, build some kind of like sled apparatus, you know, with like a string on the trigger kind of deal. And I want to run GP11 through it until it dies. Because everybody says, you know, of course you can't run GP11 through the 1889. That's the GP90 round.
That's not true.
So, but they said you could run GP11 through it in emergencies, is what the Swiss right. Swiss military said. They issued GP90 because they made it into like the 20s, I think, maybe 30s. But they made GP90 into the 20s specifically for the 1889s because they had so many of them still in service.
That's not true either. They made GP90/23 or 24.
Okay,
which was a different. I will split this hair with you if you want.
Okay. It's still GP90, whatever. It's just a different.
It's these straight pull collectors. They're all fucking crazy.
Yeah. I got all of them. all the easy ones. It's not GP. It's not GP90. So GP90 was a wax paper bullet. So it was a bullet and it had extra wax paper on it. GP90-23 was a copper jacketed bullet or Cooper Nickel.
It's just modernized G90.
Yeah, and GP90 was a semi-smokeless round, where GP90-23 was a smokeless round. Because the round that I load for my GP90 rifle, my 96, is, or 90, sorry, or 89, is, sorry.
Dear God.
Yeah, my brain's not working. I do the 90-23 round, and it shoots perfectly. And you don't got to trim cases for it either. Because the throat's big enough because of that wax paper round that everyone's like, well, it's technically 1.5 millimeters smaller. It'll chamber it just fine. So it is different a little bit.
Okay. All right. When I say GP90, I mean
GP90.
It's just, it's yeah, obviously. Yeah. The GP923 is the stuff they made in the 20s. Perfect. Okay. And they didn't make it still out of like wax and paper. In the 20s, they modernized it, but it's still GP90 that was just upgraded. So they okay. So it's the specific loading. It's a specific loading, though, is the important part.
Yeah,
right. It's not as got as much oomph behind it as the GP11. Okay,
it's lower pressure.
So you're not supposed to run. They said you could run GP11 through with 1889 for emergencies. Okay, I want to know exactly how much the action can handle, because I haven't heard anybody really talking about it or anybody that's really done it. I don't think commercial is a significant enough test. I don't know how hot, and it depends on the maker and the lot and whatever. So I feel like you just gotta run straight GP11, like the real stuff, through the 1889 and just do it until something stops working. And that's pretty much what I want to do. But that stuff's like $1 a pop. So I don't know how many, like I've thought about it. I'm like, yeah, it's gotta be, if they said you could do it at all, it's gotta be like hundreds of rounds it could handle. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So Danny, when did you decide to become IV-8086?
I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're not going to stress test a gun until it breaks.
I mean, I feel like if it's at least, you know, semi-scientific. And I'm not taking an 1889 and dragging it behind my truck in the woods and just to show off how strong this action is because the Mosin's so tough. I'm not doing that. I'm just like, hey, let's see exactly when an 1889 will break from GP11. Because that it's kind of like the Vetterlies in 6.5, you know? Run it through them and see if it breaks. And then you kind of get an idea of how, you know, how strong they are. If it's like Othiasis and they just break, you know, immediately almost within the first handful or so rounds, then, you know, okay, wow, it's very unsafe. Definitely don't run GP11 through your 1889. But if I could, I don't know, like say if I set aside 100 rounds of GP11 for this test and I run 100 rounds through it, and there's no change, and the gun's still just spitting them out fine, then I'm probably going to say it's fine.
I bet it would.
I don't agree with that.
How so?
Well, your particular example is only one of potentially hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, but, and, I mean, the tolerances on Swiss guns are pretty... Well,
okay, we're not going to argue about their build pretty quality. Pretty close. But going back to your Vetterli example... We both know Zach, who ran commercial 6.5 Carcano through his belly and didn't explode. So the fact that
he fucking held that rifle up to his face and shot it.
Yes.
How does he put his pants on those huge balls?
So
jeez.
We both know how Chile converted the 1895 to 7.62, and we know that people have shot them and not have problems, but that doesn't mean you should continue chancing it.
Do you have an 1889?
I don't. I don't think Danny does he?
Do you have one?
Right.
Danny, we can barely see what looks like a rifle because of
my, the... Yeah, see quality. See that pixelated, blurry...
The long blob right there. Line, yes.
It's so second to last.
For those who can't see that, so all of us, the difference is where the locking lugs are in the rifle between an 1889 and an 1896/11. Because most of the 89 were converted to 1911 pattern. That's why they're 1891s.
Yeah.
It's like this.
But it's so... But between the 89 and the 96, it's pretty slight. Like, it's not like a whole lot.
It's only 2 inches, but what you're talking about is metal compression.
I mean, but 2 inches is a lot in certain circumstances.
It is, but...
Danny knew exactly where I was going.
Oh, I did too. I'll take the two every time. It's metal compression, though, so you're stacking tolerances on metal compression, and I feel...
Right, whatever. You'll take the two. I get it. I have no problems, man.
I have a wife. She's right there.
I don't need to know.
He's talking about compressing his 2 inches now.
Yeah.
Okay. No. No. I want to know your expertise. He's an engineer. So.
I'm an engineer. Doesn't do math. It's metal compression. So the more you have in front, the more it's going to squeeze back. But I don't think that it's going to squeeze to where it'll fail. That's. I guess I'm on the side of it's probably going to run fine.
I'm gonna grab these bolts real quick.
Uh oh.
We're just gonna have to look at these.
Uh oh.
It's. It's not that much.
While he's doing that, Jared, look, this is the rarest round I have. Can you guess what it is?
It's a bottlenosed.
I'll give you a hint. I'll tell you the date that's stamped on the headstand.
Yeah, sure.
1896.
Is it a J round? Is it 8 mil?
No.
Fuck.
What could this be? This weird.
Could be LaBelle. No, it can't. It's not rimmed. It looks like a non-rimmed case.
It is. It's not rimmed.
Okay. It's bottlenose.
Bottlenose.
Is it bigger than 6.5?
Yes, but not 8.
Oh, so it's 7?
That is correct. But what is the length of the cartridge? Because if you'll notice, that looks a little weird, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Short?
No. It's not 7 mil Mauser.
You're correct.
Is it?
No, it's not 7 millimeter Mauser.
It's not 7 millimeter Mauser.
This is not 7x57.
Is it 6.8?
No, it's that bore.
Danny knew what I was talking about. This is 7x53.
Oh, wow.
So the Boers in South Africa were super desperate for ammunition, but DWM didn't have any space in their contracts to make them ammunition. They didn't have any excess ammunition, which was 7mm. But they had a shitload of Argentine contract 7.65x53. So they just necked down to 7mm and works. Sold it to... No, it didn't. It didn't work at all. They also lubed the bullets. So if you find one of these, you'll find like usually a bunch of shit all over the bullet. It's because they lubed them for some kind of like wax or something. And it's usually just... They were not... They hated this. Like, these were awful. But these are super hard to find. Just because of where they were. And this was in that random box of shit. So this was really neat to find.
So that is cool. You should either get a Boer rifle to go with that or sell that to me whenever I get a Boer rifle eventually.
Mike wants right, this so, too.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know why he would. He was it's not that. Like he doesn't collect Boer war stuff and is super into it.
He doesn't, does he? He kind of likes... He does like the African Mausers, but... As I look at these bolts, I will say it's a pretty significant difference between the 89 and the 96. So it's pretty significant. It's like
the locking lugs on the rear to the locking lugs of the front.
Yeah, so it's shortened overall. So like that sleeve. Yeah, let me get closer. So let me figure out how to do this. All right, so this sleeve is shorter overall. So this is the 89 here. Yeah, that's pretty significant.
What's that extra lug there too on the right? Is that just the front locking lug?
It's they're locking lugs. They're just further up.
Yeah. So these are the locking lugs way back here on the 89. So on the 96, they moved them here. So they shortened. I forgot the guy's name that did this. Ruben he pulled a Borchardt and he's like, no, my shit's perfect. It doesn't need to be fixed. And so somebody else had to fix it. This is the original 1899 locking lugs way down here. But when you look at the machining, it's like, why wouldn't you just put them up here? Because this is all like one little piece. This is one little piece right here. So it's separate to this. This is like a sleeve that goes over the outside of it. Why would he just move them up? So the next guy... I was like, yeah, let's just make this and then move it up and then make all this shorter. So he decreased the overall receiver length and bolt length. Because this
and,
is a
and weight
crazy
and
bolt.
Machine.
Yeah, time, yeah, everything.
And cost and materials.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The, yeah, everything.
The reason was because of the powder. So that's a semi-smokeless powder, but it's not fully smokeless. And they had the locking lugs all the way to the rear to keep them away from the firing event, so that way they wouldn't get fouled, because they were used to like the Vetterli, which has the locking lugs in the rear, so, which is for black powder. So that is the reason. Just so everybody that's like, oh, okay.
Like the Lee Enfields.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. A lot of the black powders are typically rear locking, but even with the lugs, this is the 1896. Mm-hmm. This is from a 1911 rifle, but it's the 19.
It's the
1896
yeah.
bolt.
And both the same.
But still, like, so even, I get the rear locking lugs, but even here, which is now forward on the sleeve, this is still a rear locking lug because this is the bolt face. So I still understand why, like, this seems like it's far enough back for, like, the people that didn't want the front locking lugs on black powder. I just don't get it. I don't know. Maybe thought this was fine and it worked fine or whatever.
I'm always fascinated by how like ridiculously complicated this bolt is.
It's not super bad. It looks worse than it is.
Yeah,
it's gigantic.
It is huge.
Yeah.
It is huge. So this is the bolt piece or the cocking handle.
The beer keg.
And how it works with the whole thing, because it's attached to the inside, which then goes around a sleeve to get the lateral motion. Wait,
bring out the Swiss 1893 bolt.
Do you want a K31 bolt, which I have in the other room too? It's right there.
No, the K31 bolt's totally different. It's a totally different.
I
just want to show, like, because that's the Mannlicher design versus this ridiculousness.
But it's funny because the Swiss hated it.
I know, because it was different, but you know.
I just think it's funny, you know, like.
But I mean, that is, I would almost say, is like a first cousin to the 1895, the M95 bolt, versus like the predecessor would be the M90 carbine, and then you have this, which is like the improvement, and then you have the M95, which is the ultimate generation of that style of design, because the 88s and the 86s and the 88-90s are all wedge locking.
Yeah, but to take one of those K30 or the older, even the older ones, like a 9611 bolt or a 1911 bolt apart, it comes right apart and goes right back together. It's super fast.
And I don't even want to take this out because I know as soon as I take, that's the thing with old man liquor. With old man liquor here, you take the bolt out and the face wants to rotate, or then it's a whole thing to try to put it out. But
oh, you're going to hurt your dime. Thumbs.
Got a dime?
It's the other way, Danny.
Yeah, I know. Oh, figure the other way.
Yeah.
Okay. Why am I? I'm feeling stupid.
Are you stunned?
Oh, here we go. Yeah. It's not the trigger. It's not the trigger.
Oh, like, that's right. It has a release.
It's another. Yeah, it has a release. Hey, it stayed together. Okay, here we go. Which is exactly, this is exactly the reason why. So, okay, 1889.
See?
Yeah, the bolt face to
like,
bolt face.
Look how much less machining work and time and effort.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it's slightly different, but that bolt that Danny's holding, the K93, as I said to Jared, is like the very, very closely related to the M95 bolt. It is very similar.
Yeah, it is. It's really hard to tell the difference between the 1893 and the 1895 bolts. If you have them side by side, they're not interchangeable or anything. But, and here we go.
You move your mic closer, Danny.
Oh,
sorry.
There you go.
I'm not used to this thing. Okay, there we go. K31.
See? See, but that's how long did they go for with the, so they went, they updated in 96, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. In 96 they updated okay.
So the 1889,
yes.
1896.
And then in 1896, they came out with the improved one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stuck with that until 1931?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, they made a long rifle, and then they made a carbine version of the 1896, which was then they changed the rifle pattern, because 1896 looks just like the 1889, yeah. And then they updated the whole footprint. They changed the 6-round magazine, and then they made the G 1911, and then the K 1911 or the K 11, and that's that bolt, and then eventually. To this, which, it's really crazy to see where that came from, you know, because holding them side by side, yeah, holding them side by side and everything, you can really see, you know, oh, like, you know, and especially the three, and kind of see the evolution of it. It's mechanically, it's super interesting, you know, and it really is this whole sort of extension thing. They just kind of got rid of that. And kept the lugs where they were on the 96, and just got rid of this whole thing. Figured out how to put this long extractor,
because they built all these inside. In house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Who made them?
There's two. Aren't there two makers?
Just the one. Burn and Signoyhausen.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. So it's got to be a case of they had the tooling, so they just kept going with it. Because, like, if you had, which you, they had bought the contracted of the 18, of the K93s, so they saw, like, you can make this a smaller package. So they must have just been like, oh, we already bought all the tooling. Why are we bothering? Why would we retool everything if it's not a problem, really?
If you want the most accurate Swiss rifle, though.
There we go.
You did it on purpose.
No, I didn't. I was trying to put it back in the gun.
If you want the most accurate Swiss rifle, you want a G11, which has the long bolt. The even the Swiss shooters today, like, they'll take the G11, the long rifle with the long bolt. They're more accurate than the K31.
They have a longer barrel and a longer sight radius.
Mm-hmm.
The 1911 long rifles.
My most accurate Swiss rifle is a 9611, and it's by like a quarter inch at 100 yards.
Have you shot that K93 yet, Danny?
No, this is on the list since the ammo fairy made me some GP9023.
Thank you. I thought I made some.
I was going to say, That's the whole discussion we had, but you were having that about the 1889, but we also had the same discussion about that rifle, because
yeah.
That's, like we said, like that rifle's essentially the 1895 design, so it should be able to handle
yeah.
GP11.
Yes. It makes sense that this action should, because it's stronger front, it's a stronger Mannlicher action, it's got the front locking lugs, should be fine.
Should,
with GP11.
Due to the should. Cost of the rifle,
yeah.
They opted to go for the correct ammo, which is 90-23 or 24.
This thing is There's being some. A pain. This reminds me every time I mess around with a Mannlicher rifle how much I don't like.
You can just like go right in with a
You know, once you do it about 50 times, you got to get used to it.
That's why I said if you have a dime, if it's in the...
No, I hate that stupid thing. I hate that trick. You just get used to it after a while, and you get the feel for it, and you can do it.
So the 1893 has a Lee magazine.
Oh, it does? 1893
Mannlicher has a Lee magazine. Yep, it's a detachable magazine.
Does it have a bolt stop?
Doesn't look like it. Yeah, it comes out. It's not as quite as easy as the Schmidt Ruben, but yeah. It's a Mannlicher Lee. Lee Mannlicher. Oh, boy.
They didn't really like each other. Well, Lee got really pissed, and he sued Mannlicher.
I think just about every gun designer sued every other gun designer back.
It was back in the day. It was a weirdly a case of like spontaneous development, which is he sued him over the Enbach clip.
Oh my god!
Oh, I could hear it click.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in a little bit and then it stops, and it's because the underside. The bolt has this little like guide rib thing that goes into this little thing in the bottom of the receiver. The 1895 doesn't have that, does it? Does it?
I don't know.
It's been a long time since I've played it apart.
The guys with the 1900s and the 1905 short rifles are shooting right now.
And if I, so it's just stuck, right? Because I don't know. I'm misaligning That's something. Stuck. I'm doing something yeah. wrong. But if I pull the bolt out, the bolt face will flip around and yeah, and do that. Oh my gourd.
I'm over here with the old 1900 just hammering rounds out right now. They are longer. They have compression, but they just go right in.
Yeah. Every time
Don't
I mess
breathe
around.
On it. Don't breathe.
But I gotta say, of all my I love carbines, just light handy little carbines. Of all my carbines, this is a really nice one.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of nice things to you could say about this, because it's a Mannlicher without a Mannlicher magazine, so which is kind of weird. I don't want to talk about this anymore before Aaron gets back, because he's a Mannlicher guy. But this one has like some tiger stripe.
I like the Dutch sights on it though.
Yeah,
well they're not.
Yeah, they're
it would be before Dutch. The Dutch, but they're Dutch sights.
Yeah, they're interesting.
They're quadrant sights.
Yeah, it's a unique gun, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's very, I've held it. It's very nice.
Uh-oh, here he comes. The M95 in hand. Is that your favorite M95, Aaron?
No, this is the one I got from Joel.
Ah, the oldie.
In the 1902 acceptance.
So it's one of the only ones that can, yeah. I think this one was made in 90. It's an antique. I forgot what year. I looked it up a long time ago, but I forgot.
See? Immediately snapped shut, right? Don't need no help, guys.
Yeah, but putting it back in the rifle is the whole thing, right? Oh, frig. Yeah, you've done that a few times, obviously. Okay, look.
Well, if it's all clapped out, you know.
Yeah, if it's all loose and all loosey-goosey, we got us a...
All right, now jam it in there real hard. It's not a $1,200 rifle. Just blow it in there. See?
Yeah.
You're fucked. I'm over here with the old 1900.
Right. I'm going to get this microphone out of the way, and I'm going to give her the old college try.
For those
Can't
of you,
hear you
at home, Aaron just blew off 5 rounds with that without touching the trigger. That's a feature.
We didn't have to touch the trigger to shoot.
Yeah, it's not fun when it happens. Yeah. You're looking at your buddy. You're having a good time laughing and joking. Bam! Now you're both shit in your pants because you don't know what's going on, especially when no one warned you about this because you didn't watch the podcast. I like this. I'm just commentating on it. Danny right now is trying to jam a bolt into a rifle that costs like $1,300.
He's so
trying. It just stops. It just go. I don't remember this happening last time, but I haven't played with this rifle in a long time.
Did you
I don't
spit
remember
on it?
This happening. Maybe. Oh, I didn't spit on it first. You're right.
Yeah.
It's the decent thing to do, the common courtesy.
Yes. Like a gentleman. I really feel like I'm commentating right now. This is great.
So what everybody's talking about, what he's talking about with the dime trick is if you have a really worn out bolt, then this will not stay like this. I have one that's like that. It will just snap immediately back. It will not stay open. That is what they call broken, which means that you need to get something fixed in there. So usually
it's not a feature.
Yeah, it's not a feature.
Not a feature.
Not a feature. So it should lock in place like this. Now it can immediately come loose.
Can.
By just tapping it. It will come loose like it did, but you should be able to immediately open it and lock it back in place. See? And everybody's like, oh my God, your hands. And I'm like, I'm not that strong, guys. And it does bite into your hands if you don't do it. Oh, Danny got it.
I don't know.
See?
I don't know what I was doing.
You just got to jam it in there like a college kid drunk on a Friday. Just
this is, Aaron, I just want you to know that this is what a numbers matching Mon Liquor feels like.
Mine are all in the basement. In the save, so I can't
wait. Hold on, Danny. I have a numbers matching M95, my M95 24.
You're
how many times was it rebuilt? Like 15?
That's Yugoslavian. We don't talk about
all
that.
all the times. Then
the M95 24s were the first ones. Okay, not those basic M95 Ms.
All right, so that was kind of a pain, right, to get the bolt.
Yeah, banging in one of the Swiss guns. Yeah.
There we go.
Why did you
now
take the Why did you take the magazine out?
For dramatic effect. There he is.
Yeah, just so I can do that. Oh, that's that gun. It's just so boring.
I was talking about the K-31.
Let's kill the action real quick.
Wait, was that the K-31?
Yeah, it's K-31. Yeah, it has aluminum handle.
It's so smooth. Wow, I didn't know straight pulls could feel so smooth. Yeah, how's the weather in Egypt?
Aaron? All those times, those were slam fires. It's a feature.
How's the weather in Egypt?
It's fine
with your Mon Liquor, because you're obviously in denial.
So Jared, this one doesn't make sense. So this rifle is an original Stutzen in 8x50R with 1902 acceptance with a matching barrel and receiver, but that's got a long rifle rear
long sight on it. Yeah,
not and it's got a banded front sight, which means it should be a cut down rifle, but it's not. And then it's like, well, then it just has a barrel replacement, and then you look and it's a matching barrel, and you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Look at this rear sight.
The stock is matching too. Oh my God, that rear sight.
That's a quadrant sight.
That magazine too. Are those speed holes? Are those speed holes?
There you go. That's the top setting. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Does the mag cutoff work?
Yeah, right there.
So you can watch the mag move.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. This rifle was one of the fixed ones. So this rifle came. I took it off and stored it, but there's a little piece of metal that was made and it clamps onto the little mag cutoff where it keeps it in the on position where you can't push it up. It basically just holds this lever down, which was with the mag up, which was mag cutoff off.
Disengaged.
So yes, disengaged. It came with that, but I took it off. I have it in my gun parts bin, but it's just really weird. It's like one of the most interesting magazine cutoffs.
That's what the Americans
wanted. The 1889 is a pretty neat gun.
On a mag, off, but disconnect. That's why we have
crack. And it's so interesting. So this is my whole thought with, you know, like there's a lot of people when they talk about the Lee Enfields and stuff, and it's like, oh, it was so much better. The Lee Enfield's so much better because that's 10 rounds, obviously. It's better, right? Has 10 round Lee magazine. But it's like, if it was so apparent, if you know, if it was so apparently better, you know, to have over 5 or 6, then why did the Swiss go from 12 down to, you know, why did they half their magazine capacity? You know, I don't know of any other country that's like halved their magazine capacity, like in the evolution going towards, you know, smokeless powder.
Oh, that would be the R-35 Lebel.
Not exactly.
It's a joke, but it does reduce it down to 3. Oh,
yeah,
it does. Well, the it does. And the British went up, not down, because they had an 8-round non-charger loading and it went to 10-round charger loading.
Yeah, exactly. So they went up to 10.
The rifle that would have competed with that one would have been the Medford.
It was in the 1890s when they did that. I'm trying to remember exactly when. But yeah. But it's so interesting. So like my whole point with this is like, why would the Swiss go down if it was super important? Like if truly, national defense was a huge, you know, it's a huge priority for Switzerland and these, you know, having the best rifles, you know, how would it not be seen as a huge sort of, you know, going down, having the magazine capacity as not being like a, you know, a national defense.
A detriment imperative sort is of the thing. Word I think you're
looking for. Yeah, detriment. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so to me, maybe the Swiss 1889 is an example of maybe why, you know, having extra rounds, you know, going up to the 10 or 12 rounds isn't necessarily a plus over, you know, the 5 or 6.
And they came from the Vetterli, which had a bunch.
Yeah, the Vetterli had 12 too, which is why I wanted 12 in the 1889.
But the this is just me logicking this in my brain here. So the time period that these would all come out, we're still transitioning from single shot, for the most part, single shot, big bore black powder rifles, and that would require like still shooting line formation. I think still massed volley fire essentially. For the most part, I mean, I'm assuming not as much, but it's definitely volley fire still is a thing. Mm-hmm. And the reason they had this, the cutoff was so that they would do the directed fire single shot, and then if they needed to, they could have extra ammunition for close range or whatever, right? So it was. I almost would like to think it was probably at the time period, the idea was jam as many rounds as you can, because, you know, we've suddenly have the ability to do that. You know, we were one shot before and now we can do a bunch. So why wouldn't we jam as many as we can in there? And then as technology improved and different techniques and stuff improved, the Swiss realized, oh, we don't really need 12 rounds. And we're not doing mass volley fire or volley fire anymore, so we can cut this down, save weight, save machining time and stuff like that, versus the British, who were like, well, we don't really need to change much, we'll just get rid of the volley sights and be done with it, right?
Yeah, I just had a... Yeah.
The I just Brits had a... kept the volleys, sorry.
Yeah, they did. They kept them into World War One, didn't they? But they changed mid-World War One or stopped because of it was too much of a...
In 1916, they stopped.
Okay.
Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about this with the Swiss rifle, I'm trying to think of when their packet loading came out.
The 6 rounds?
Yeah, their little 6-round charger packet loading.
The packets came out with the 1889 rifle. That's why it's 12. Because you would load 2 packs of 6.
So my thought was, what if it didn't come out in 1889? What if it came out later? Maybe that's why. No, it didn't.
No, it came out because the packets.
I can't remember.
Packets are special for the because all the packets work in all the guns. The only guns that are actually even a little different is actually the K31s. All K31s are cut for a stripper clip that was field tested. But they never adopted it. They kept the same packets.
1911 long rifle?
Yeah, it'll take the same packet.
To add the stripper clip.
Does it have the stripper clip cut?
Yeah, the 1911s have the stripper clip.
They never adopted stripper clips. They always used those cardboard packet loading, and they always loaded them in 6 rounds. So the 6, that's why it's 12. You would load 6, then 6, and you're good to go. And then when they went to the 1896, I'm trying to think. Those are a 6-round box. So it's one packet, bam, load, go. Because there's really not a lot of time savings.
Hey, yeah. I'd like to keep talking, but one of my daughters just woke up. So are we wanting to wrap up soon? Because we're at an hour and 50.
Yeah, it's like damn near midnight.
Yeah, we can wrap up.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut us off like that.
You're fine.
It's okay.
We can do more visual stuff later on.
Yeah. No, this is a good first trial, I think.
Yeah. Video trial round.
More visual aids.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, if you're like on Spotify or whatever listening to this and audio only, we apologize. This will be a lot more entertaining if you watch it on the YouTubes and you'll have the video.
Right. But I tried to talk enough that what I was talking about, you could still idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, thank you guys for, we didn't really have a topic. We just kind of left off. We just went off, which is fun. Yeah. I need a new effing camera.
We have some YouTube personalities lined up, right, to come on?
Yeah, I've talked to a few of them. Haven't gotten any hard dates for them to come on. I don't want to say their names necessarily. No, they end up ditching. Yeah,
we've reached out to some
bigger gun tubers and stuff. It'd be cool. Maybe we can get some of them on in the future. We have some, this was kind of a last minute sort of podcast, but we have a list of,
it was like
Patreon members
30 minutes before. Yeah.
Yeah. This is kind of how we roll. I think people think we've had a lot more like thought behind these than we really do.
Some of them we do, just but like, not hey, all of them.
Yeah.
This is one of those, but we have.
So if you're listening to the podcast, check out the YouTube channel. If you're watching the YouTube channel, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Ring that bell for notifications. Yes. Ring that bell. Ring that bell for notifications.
Smash the like button.
Yeah. Smash that like button, everybody. And,
oh, my goodness.
we have a Patreon. Millsoap World has a Patreon, right, Danny?
Yes. And a Discord. Yes, that is what funds.
Danny had a flashbang go off.
That's what funds. I'm just doing that. That's what funded these webcams that you're seeing us on, except me, but I'm going to have to get one now because this is a potato. Yeah, oh, there you go. Send some mood lighting, Aaron. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you're going to have that lighting. I just set up my lighting in here. Like, I have a red light on me, right? That's like off camera over there, and then I got lighting back here. This is a really dark room without my studio lighting.
All right, I've got to go. So I appreciate everybody for coming on.
Thank you.
This is a good first run, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll see. Hopefully this will be better, more professional, even more so. No. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Maybe.
Maybe less chaotic, but
yeah,
I doubt it.
Yeah, but we're like
hand motions.
Right. Yes. I don't know what to do with my hands.
All right. Bye. Bye, guys.
All right. See you.
See you.